Okay. There's one major aspect of Shemitah left for us to discuss, and that's, of course, the Din of Shemitat Kitafim, and the institution of Puzbol, which was instituted, of course, as a response to the issues generated by this particular mitzvah. Basically, everything I'm going to say in today's shiur is basically straight out of Rav Yimon's book. I mean, in the Sefer, it's really, really excellent in general, but on this topic particularly, I think it's a more systematic treatment of Shemitah Tzachim than I saw in the other Sfarim I looked at. So I just want to say, basically, that's where most of this comes from. Now, the Gemara that I gave you, we start from Shnayot. We'll come back to the Mishnah a little bit. But the first issue is whether Shmitat Tzachim applies to Zman HaZed D'Oraita or D'Rabbanan. And at least Abayi in the Gemara tells us that Shmitat Tzachim Zman HaZed is mean D'Rabbanan, just like Shmitat Karka is. And although there is some discussion about it in the Achronim, in the Rishonim, because after all, if you read the Gemara carefully, it seems that Rava may disagree with Abayi. We'll talk about that more in a few minutes. But Rabbi certainly disagrees with Abaye. I shouldn't say certainly. It seems that Rabbi disagrees with Abaye when it comes to the question of the question the Gemara wants to know, which is how, in fact, they can go ahead and do this. Why don't we read the Gemara? Let's start with that. I'm just talking about it. Let's take a quick look and read it. Kanan Hasam, the Mishnah. The Gemara in Gittin, but it's making reference to the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Gittin, which I didn't give you, says that Hillel his king Puzbol Mishum Tikkun Olam. We'll get to Puzbol and what the Tikkun Olam was in a few minutes. And on this, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah in Shvi'i that Puzbol Eino Mishamet Ze Echad Min Advarim Shehitkin Hillel Hazakein Shera'a Et Ha'am Shenimnu Milahavot Ze Et Ze Va'avru Ama Shekatu B'Torah Hishamer Lecha Pen Yed Avayim Levavcha B'Li'al V'Gom. Okay, we'll talk more about this in a few minutes when we get to Puzbol. We saw that the Torah already warned us not to have this davar bli'al in our hearts that gets us to hold back and refrain from lending people money. But the bottom line is people failed that test and they were doing exactly what the Torah says not to do. And the bottom line is that therefore Shemitah Tzachim was sort of backfiring, because Shemitah Tzachim is meant apparently to help the poor people. Someone borrowed money, built up debts, and now he can't pay. We discussed once that it's probably not coincidental that the Torah gives this to us at the end of the Shemitah year, that kind of Shemitah year when there's no farming being done. So the Torah promised that Tziviti Efir Chasi, you'll have enough left from the sixth year, but there may be people who don't have enough left, or maybe we weren't Zohar, there was much of a bracha, whatever it is, and therefore the poor people may have Dafka needed loans and not been able to pay them back, and at the end of the Shemitah year, so part of Shemitah is that you have to release those loans. It's meant to help the poor people. But if, instead, what winds up happening is the rich people simply refuse to lend money to the poor people, so then the whole thing backfires. Sometimes that can happen with laws. You can have a law that's meant to help a certain sector of the population, and it can actually backfire. I remember that, my wife learned this, there's a law in Israel that basically says you're not allowed to fire a pregnant woman. Okay? If you have a woman who's working for you, and she's pregnant, right? You can't fire her. Not only, I think until a year after she has a baby. In theory, if she managed to stop doing her job or go out, she can take you to court and you have to really prove in court that, you know, and what are they worried about? This law is meant to protect women because, you know, people don't want pregnant women working for them. It's a pain in the neck, right? Now she's going to go on Chupshat Leida, and I have, by law, I have to give her the Chupshat Leida, and then I have to hire someone temporarily, and then she's going to come back, and when she comes back, I have to give her shot Hanaka. Also, I have to let her take time off to nurse the baby. Who needs it? I'll just fire her and hire someone else, the Gamarnu. And the law wants to protect against that, and therefore, you know, that's the law. Fine. So, but my wife was pregnant with one of our children. I don't know which one. I think it was the last one with Elchanan. And she had been laid off from a job. The truth is she was pregnant when they laid her off, but they didn't know she was pregnant. It was not actually the beginning. She could have told them she was pregnant and forced them to leave her on, but she decided not to do that. So she was laid off from her job, and she took her unemployment and whatever. So they fired her. She was only 2-3 months pregnant. It must be because they didn't even know she was pregnant. and she had a couple of months of pitsuyim, a severance pay, and a little bit of unemployment, so she just didn't work for a few months. And then she was, you know, all that ran out, and we needed money, so she figured, okay, look, I'm having a baby now. She was like in her sixth, seventh month. She figured, okay, I'm having a baby, there's Rez Hashem in a few months. I'm not going to go look for a real job in computers. Let me just find some temporary work, something. And sure enough, there was an advertisement for a local job. Somebody went on Chutzpah Leidah. Some other woman who was a secretary in a local company right near our house went on Chutzpah Leidah. And it was an advertisement looking for someone for 3 months to fill a secretary position. So my wife said, this is perfect. It's not a lot of money. It's not as much as I normally make. But whatever, you know, I'm pregnant already and whatever. Yeah, fine. So she applies for the job. So they tell her, they write back to look, you're over, you know, she goes for an interview. And they tell her, you're overqualified for this, you're used to making a lot more money. She says, I know, listen, I mean, she's been a secretary, also my wife, and whatever, I just want to work for a few months, and, you know, I'm having a baby, and then I'll have another chutzpah leidah, and then hopefully I'll find another job, you know, it's perfect for me. So they, you know, they said they don't want to hire her, and she's pressing, what's the problem, you know? Finally they admitted to her, look, our lawyer told us we're crazy if we hire you, because if we hire you, then we have a secretary, right? She's coming back in 3 months. But if we hire you, we can't fire you. And then we're going to be stuck with two secretaries. We only need one secretary. She said, what's the problem? I don't want to work here afterwards. I only want to work for 3 months. Then I'm having a baby. And afterwards, this is not what I want to be doing. They said, yeah. She said, I'll sign on the piece. I'll give you a letter. I'll sign it that I waive my rights to not be fired. I don't want to work here. I, you know, this is good for you. It's good for me. They wouldn't hire her. The lawyer told them not to. So here's a law that's meant to protect pregnant women. And it wound up, the very law wound up hurting her. She couldn't get a job because of that. So sometimes these things happen. So that's what Hillel saw. Hillel found himself in that situation. The poor people that are supposed to be protected by Shemitah Kesef. And in the end, it's hurting them even more. Because not only do they not get the loan forgiven, they don't even get the loan at all. So Hillel decided finally he has no choice but to make the Puzzle. We'll talk about that more in a few minutes. So the Gemara is bothered by this. How does this work? The Torah says there's Shemitah Kesafim, and Hillel comes along and makes a Puzzle and says, don't worry about it, you don't have to keep the law. How does that work? The Torah says you have to not collect your debts, and Hillel says, don't worry about it. I made a Puzzle. You can collect your debts. How does that work? What gives Hillel the authority to override the law of the Torah? Amar Abaye, b'shvit, b'zman hazeh. V'rebi hi, b'tanya, Rebi Omer, b'zed, dvar ha-shmitah, shamot. B'shtei shmitah, t'katub medaber, achat shmitah karka, achat shmitah ksofim. B'zman sh'ata meshamei karka, ata meshamei ksofim. B'zman sh'yeta meshamei karka, So, the Gemara, Abaye's answer to the Gemara's question of what gives Hillel the authority to do this, is that the starting point of Hillel was that he held like Rebbe. And Rebbe held that the Zman HaZeh is no Shemitah Kesafim in the Torah, but if there's no Shemitah Karka, there's no Shemitah Kesafim. Now, by the way, that line in the Gemara, whenever there's no Shemitah Karka, there's no Shemitah Kesafim, that line in the Gemara is subject of a discussion and a debate what exactly it means. It could be that the term Shemitah Karka there, which we think means Shemitah, might really mean Yovel, because Yovel is a form of Shemitah Karka. You let the ground, you release it and give it back to its original owners, and whether it means that when there's no yovel, there's no shmitat kesafim, or whether there's no yovel, there's no shmitat karka, and there's no shmitat karka. So that's a discussion. But in any case, the bottom line of Abaye, we're not getting into that discussion, is that Abaye's answer to how Hillel could do this was, it only works bizman hazeh. Bizman hazeh shmitat kesafim is midrabanan. Min haTorah, there's no shmitat kesafim at all. The rabbis wanted us to remember that there's a law called shmitat kesafim, so they gave us a mitzvah of shmitat kesafim midrabanan. And therefore, since it was a sakana to Rabbanan, so Hillel and his Beit Din, I guess, had the authority of modifying the sakana. That's Abaye's answer. Rava says something else. Rava invokes a principle called Hefker Beit Din hefker. Now this is a halakhic principle that is very wide-reaching and subject to a significant debate also in terms of how hefker Beit Din works and what exactly the extent of it is, what exactly Beit Din is able to do and what Beit Din is not able to do. But the principle of hefker Beit Din hefker is that Beit Din has the ability to, at least under certain conditions or in certain ways, to take away people's money. You own something, Beit Din can say, no you don't. Or even if they can't say, even if they can't say to you as an individual, and perhaps they can, but even if they can't, they can make a new law that says, Mina Torah, you know, you don't owe this person money, but Mitzvah Rabbanan you do. Or the other way around. Mina Torah you have to pay, but Mitzvah Rabbanan you don't have to pay. When it comes to monetary matters, Beit Din has the authority to enact legislation that can cause monetary payment or a lack of monetary payment. They can change the situation in terms of who owes who money. That's what I'm just trying to be as general as possible because we don't have a lot of time. It's a whole debate in itself. What has to Beit Din have to mean? But in any case, Rava's position is that Shemitah Ksafim works on this basis. Minas Torah, this has been a Shemitah Ksafim, which means he doesn't have to pay. But Hillel came along and made a principle and said, using the authority of the Beit Din to take money away from one person and give it to another person, that we're able to do that. The question is, was Rava... Exactly, that's exactly the question. Is Rava arguing with Abaye, or is Rava explaining Abaye? That's also a discussion among the Rishonim. In other words, according to Abaye, it seems that Prusba will only work when Shemitah Ksafim is Nidra Abanan, and if Shemitah Ksafim is Deoraita, it sounds like from Abaye, there is no Prusba. Whereas, with Rava's answer, it works by hefker, Beit Din, hefker. You could understand, especially the flow, I skipped the line in the Gemara. The Gemara asks, The Gemara is asking actually how you can even have Shemitah Ksafim Nidra Abanan. If the Torah says that there's no Shemitah Ksafim, that means the guy still owes me money. If he still owes me money, then how can the rabbis come along and say he doesn't owe me money? So that's what Rava's answering when he says hefker, Beit Din, hefker. So the question is whether Rava therefore really agrees with Abaye, and he's just going on further along Abaye's way, and Rava also agrees that Prusba only works when Shemitah is Nidra Abanan, or whether it's the other way. And once Rava invokes the principle of Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker, so the same way the rabbis can make Shemitah Ksafim when there is no Shemitah Ksafim, by using Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker, they can do the opposite also. And when there is Shemitah Ksafim in the Torah, it tells the rabbis to say you have to pay them anyway because of Hefker, Beit Din. Maybe that's what Rava is saying. And even though we're not talking about Prusbul yet, but since we got into this, that's the Machlokas Rambam and Raivis. Or maybe Machlokas Rambam and Raivis. Rambam Paskin, the Prusbul only works when Shemitah is, because suffering is neither upon us. That sounds like, the question is whether the Rambam is Paskin like Abaye, or whether, no, he's Paskin like Rava, and holding the Rava agrees with Abaye. But in any case, that's what the Rambam Paskin is, and the Raivis disagrees. The Raivis says, no, Prusbul works even when Shemitah suffering is right. In any case, the majority opinion among Rishonim, just like what we said with Shemitah Tzarka, is that Shemitah Tzafim also is Nidra Abanan Bizman Hazer, and therefore the machloket between the Rambam and the Raivis is not relevant. The same way, if and when, from here of Yemenu, we get to a situation that Yovel is Doraisa and Shemitah is Doraisa, and therefore Shemitah Ksafim is definitely Doraisa, so then we'll have to investigate the question of whether Prusbul will still work. Then the Machlokas Rambam and Raivid will become relevant. But Karega, that is not the situation. Okay. Okay, but there is one major difference between Shemitah Ksafim and Shemitah Karka. Even if they both do Rabbanan, and they both do Rabbanan for similar reasons, there is one major difference between them. That is what? I would have asked you at the beginning of the summer, you probably would have realized. I'm sure you've been here long enough that you forgot about this. Chutz La'aretz! Remember that place? There are Jews there, can you imagine? Can you imagine there are Jews living in Chutz La'aretz who haven't observed Shemitah all year? Because it doesn't apply? Can you imagine such a thing? There are? What? It ain't any truth, right? Rav Himon has a beautiful thing about that in the book. He writes about how he was in New York, and he was hungry. So he ran in, and he was in Manhattan. So he ran into some bodega or something. He didn't call it a bodega. He doesn't know that word, but that's probably what it was. And some grocery store. And he doesn't know what hashgachah is, because he's Israeli. He doesn't know what he can eat. So he's thinking, I'll buy fruit. Okay, he picks up an apple. It's a beautiful apple. Really nice, very nice fruit they have there in America. And I instinctively, what? No. So he says, no, you're right. So I picked up the apple, and he says, I instinctively start to think, wait, what halachic issues are there here? Do I have to worry about orla, tevel, you know, did it take too much of masters? Could it be shavik? And he said, I realized that it's just an apple. And I didn't want to eat it anymore, so I put it down. We have to, I don't have to worry about all this stuff, right? Okay. But in Chutz La'aretz, there is one aspect of Shemitah that applies, and that is Shemitah Ksafim. According to the Gemara in Kiddushin, Shemitah Ksafim applies in Chutz La'aretz to be Daraisa, obviously whenever it is Daraisa, but it's not that the rabbis instituted. And the logic behind that is that even though Shemitah is a mitzvah of Tluya Ba'aretz, and Shemitah Ksafim, even in Chutz La'aretz, is tied to Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael, right? When we don't have Rov Yoshveha Aleha, we hold in the Torah, there's no Shemitah Ksafim everywhere. So it's all connected to Eretz Yisrael. But Shemitah Ksafim itself is a Chovat HaGuf. It's not a Chovat HaKarta. So if I'm in New York, and I have an apple orchard, so there's no concept of Vishavta Ha'aretz Shabbat Lashem. And therefore there's no Isurim of Shemitah Karka, there's no Isurim Malacha, and there's no Kedusha Beirel. But Kesef? What does this make if I'm in New York or in Yerushalayim? Money is just money. It's a Chovat HaGuf. That's not connected to the Lord. And therefore the Gemara says that even though Shemitah, in principle, Shemitah Ksachim is connected, is part of Shemitah, is all of Mitzvah Tzuluya Ba'aretz. This aspect of Shemitah applies in Chutz La'aretz exactly the same as it applies in Eretz Yisrael. One is Daraisa in Eretz Yisrael, it's Daraisa in Chutz La'aretz. If it's the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, then the rabbis will go in Chutz La'aretz still. Shemitah Ksachim applies equally here or in Chutz La'aretz. And this is one aspect of Shemitah that the Jews in Chutz La'aretz get to keep. Unfortunately, I have some not nice things to say, and I'll try to say them delicately, but in a few minutes. Okay. I'm not really angry, I'm just sad. But I'll explain. We'll get to that. Okay. Now, so the din of Shemitat Ksafim is that when Shemitah occurs, the debt is canceled. First of all, when does this take place? When? The very end of the Shemitah year, a few weeks from now. Theoretically, it's not on Rosh Hashanah, it's right before Rosh Hashanah. And it's the last second. It functionally turns means on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is right in the eighth year. As the Shemitah year ends, in the last moment of Kaf Tet Elul of the Shemitah year, that's when Shemitah Ksafim happens. How do we know that? It's linked in the Pasuk, which says, Miketz Sheva Shanim Ta'aseh Shemitah. Miketz Sheva Shanim, and the Gemara learns that connected to the mitzvah of Hakel, which is another mitzvah that doesn't exist as Manas Devi. We have a Zecher to it, it'll be this coming Sukkot. The Sukkot following the Shemitah year is the mitzvah of Hakel. As Manas Devi, we only have Zecher la Hakel, because we don't have Beit HaMikdash, so then we don't have anywhere to gather for the Hakel. They do a Zecher by the Kotel, but that's only a Zecher. It's an interesting discussion, who reads. The way they do it is not what I think they should do. But they usually have the chief rabbis read, and they have other big rabbis read. Of course, it's all politics, or whether, you know, the Spartans have their rabbi, and the Ashkenazim have their rabbi, and the Haredim this one, and the Zionists that one. And personally, a few years back, there was a suggestion that they should have the prime minister read. And how could you do such a thing? He's not even religious, you know. But in the midst of Hakel, who's supposed to read? The Melech, not the Kohen, right? Not the Navi. The whole point, I think if they should have, make Ehud Olmert stand there, put one of those dumb people on his head, and read from Sefer Dvarim. That's a Kiddush Shem Shemayim. He's the closest thing. We don't like maybe the fact that that's who our Melech is, but it's the closest thing we have. That's what I would like to see. So 7 years ago, the president of Israel was Moshe Katsav, who at least back then everyone thought was a little bit religious. Back then he was, before we knew, or he hasn't been tried or convicted on anything, so maybe he'll turn out he's innocent, but whatever. Back then, he's a sort of Shomer Shabbos a little bit, so they had Moshe Katsav, who's not the prime minister, but he's the Nesi Medina. So they had him read, and then a bunch of rabbis also. So I like that. We'll see if they have Shimon Peres do it this time. That'll be interesting. Hold on. Could be that he would. Could be he would. Maybe they will. I don't know. I'd like to see. I'd like to see, I guess Olmert will probably still be prime minister then. I'd like to see Olmert or Peres or both of them, but Nira. The Chomikre. So in comparison to Hakel, so they learn that the Kate Sheva Shanim, that's what applies to Shemitah Ksafim as well. And if a Shemitah Ksafim takes place at the very last moment of the Shemitah year, as Rosh Hashanah begins of Motzai Shvit of the 8th year. At that moment, Shemitah Ksafim goes into effect, and anybody who owes anyone money at that point, the debt is cancelled. In a minute we'll see what it means if the debt is cancelled. There is an opinion of the Rosh who learns differently. The Rosh holds that Shemitah Ksafim begins already at the beginning of Shemitah and goes all the way through Shemitah. It applies to the beginning and at the end, basically. And therefore, so that means that according to the Rosh, if someone owes me money today, I'm not allowed to collect it. But the debt isn't cancelled yet. Meaning, before Shemitah, I could collect it. But if he owes me money today, even if I left it during Shemitah, I lent him my money 2 months ago, I was going to Rosh, I can't collect it right now. No. The nafkamina is that according to the Rosh, Shemitah Ksafim applies to the whole Shemitah. So even if I lend people money before Shemitah, I can't collect it during Shemitah. Whereas everyone else tells, no, it only takes place at the end. Okay, therefore there are some people who are machmir, of Lichtenstein is machmir to make a pruzbol twice, last Rosh Hashanah and this Rosh Hashanah. Make a pruzbol before Shemitah and at the end of Shemitah. Both. But most people aren't machmir for the Rosh. So we assume that Shemitah Ksafim applies at the very end of Shemitah. Now what happens when that goes into effect? So the Torah tells us two things. Do I have a psukim here? Samach maybe? Do you have a sheet? The Torah says two things. Mikesh Sheva Shanim, Tase Shemitah, V'zeh Parah Shemitah, Shamot Kol Baal Mashe Yado, Asher Yasher Tereh, who? Release that which, you know, you're going to collect from your brother. Lo yigos et re'ehu ve'et achiv ki kara shmita al Hashem. So there's a mitzvah aseh here, and a mitzvah lot aseh. Mitzvah aseh is shamot, release the debt, and the mitzvah lot aseh is lo yigos. Don't press them and try to collect the debt. Now this, by the way, is parallel in a certain sense to Shemitah Tzarka. There we had, is that really true? Let me think about that for a second. Sort of. Sort of. We have a mitzvah aseh, tishmetenu nitashta, right, to make it hefker. And then we have lot aseh, you're not allowed to work on it, you're not allowed to do schorah with it. It's not exactly a one-to-one parallel, but there, you know, there's two aspects to it as well here. Now, similar to what we saw by Shemitah Karka, if you remember, with the mitzvah of Hefker, we saw a very interesting lumpish discussion of how Hefker works in Shemitah. Does it happen automatically, or is it a mitzvah that you have to do? And the nafkamina is what happens if somebody doesn't do it, right? We talked about that. There's a similar machloket regarding, the Minchas Chinuch talks about this, regarding Shemitah Ksafim. Is, I'm told, Shamot, lo yigos. Okay? So it means I have to tell the guy, and we'll see in a minute the Mishnah, that if he tries to, okay, let's read the Mishnah right now. The Mishnah says, the last Mishnah of the second Shvit, the second class Mishnah, the first Mishnah says, Hamazdir Chov Bashvit. Okay, the guy comes to me after Shemitah, it's going to have to mean. Right? Let's say someone borrows money from me today. And then Shemitah Tzafim comes. So I'm told, Shamot, lo yigos. So I forget about the loan. I said to make sure the guy comes over to me, by the way, here's the money you lent me. So I have to say to him, Mishametani. I have to say to him, you don't have to pay me. Because it was Shemitah Ksafim. Amarlo, and if he says, Afal Pichem, no, it's okay, I want to pay you anyway, you can bail me then. And I can take it. And the next mission it says, Hamas Lichot Bashvit Ruach Chachamim Melchemen. That the rabbis actually are very, very approving of that, and they encourage the loaver, the borrower, if you can, to pay it back. We'll see and talk in a minute even more about how that works. But What happens if I don't do that? If I break the law, I don't release him, and I even let him go. I even go over to him and say, no, you owe me money, pay me back. So I'm breaking the law. Fine. Does he owe me the money or not? So it depends. Depends on how you view Shemitah Kesafim. One way to view it is a very similar concept to what we saw by Hefker. There are those who view Shemitah Kesafim as what's called Afka'ata de Malka. Hashem said that he doesn't have to pay, he doesn't have to pay. So I'm breaking the law by trying to get money, and basically I'm trying to steal money from him. He doesn't owe it to me anymore. Right? And I'm trying to steal it from him. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, no, I had a mitzvah call. Shemitah Kesafim. I didn't do my mitzvah. I didn't release the debt. I'm illegally trying to collect the debt, but the bottom line is he still owes it to me. So for example, if I do collect the debt, and again to pay me, so I violate the Isser of Shemitah Kesafim. Did I also violate the Isser of Geza? Or not? No, I collected my money. He owed it to me. The Torah told me not to collect it, and I did anyway. And there's some interesting nafkaminas to this. For example, let's say the guy doesn't do what he's supposed to do. Right? The guy continues to try to collect the debt after Shemitah happened. So the low there, the borrower can probably take him to Beit Din and sue him. What we're discussing is how Shemitah Kesafim works.
There are two things. One is what you know,
the background of the person. There are the Shemot. So what's Shemot? It's one way of looking at it. One way of looking at it is that the Torah said the debt is canceled. The other way of doing it is the Torah commanded me to cancel the debt. So watch this nafkamina. Let's say the guy doesn't do it. Right? Gimel Tishrei, Dalet Tishrei, Hey Tishrei, he calls up the guy, no, where's my money? The guy says, what do you mean, Shemitah Kesafim? He says, don't give me your Shemitah Kesafim. I don't care about the laws, pay me the money. So at that point, it could be that the guy can sue him, even if you hold that Shemitah Kesafim is that he has to do it, it could be that the Lova can sue him in Beit Din, and Beit Din could force him to release the debt. But watch this. What if at that moment the guy drops dead? And the guy dies. The lender. Okay? So when a person dies, his children inherit his property, and you also inherit any debt. Right? Now, Shemitah Kesafim was a mitzvah that happened 4 days ago. The father didn't do the mitzvah. The sons are not obligated now in Shemitah Kesafim. They released their debt. Their father was a Rasha. He violated the law and didn't release the debt. So if you hold that Shemitah Kesafim means the law was canceled anyway, the debt was canceled anyway, then the lender didn't owe it to the father anymore, and now he doesn't owe it to the sons. But if you hold that Shemitah Kesafim is that the father had a chiyuv to release the debt, so the father didn't do what he was supposed to do. But now the father is dead, and the children inherited the debt. Now he only owes my two children. They're not obligated to release the debt, because Shemitah's over. When it was Shemitah, they released their debts, or they didn't release their debts, but this debt wasn't theirs. Their father didn't do the mitzvah. He'll deal with debts in Shemal at this point. Right now they own the money. According to that, you'd have to pay the son. There's no question that Ruach HaChamim would be no chayimena from the son, but they released their debt anyway. But the point is, if it came to court, who would win? If the father's still alive, if he comes to court, either way, either the court is going to tell him, tough, you're a Rasha, but the debt was canceled by God, or the court is going to tell him, we're now ordering you to cancel the debt. And they can compel him to do so, by court order, right? But if he dies, now the son's inherited. So if the debt was canceled automatically, then there's no debt. If the debt wasn't canceled automatically, the Beit Din might say to the son's, look, this is a technicality. Really, your father should have done this. He didn't do it. It's the right thing to do. But if the kids refuse, they're not going to be obligated because it wasn't their mitzvah. Okay? So there's a few other nafkaminot as well. What about if there's a suffix? I'll give you a better case. Let's say there's a suffix whether Shemitah Kesafim applies in a certain case. And we're going to see there are a lot of cases, right, where it's not clear. Right? The Mishnah talks about hakafat hachanut. Right? You have a tab at the makos. Right? You have an arrangement with your makolet that you just buy stuff and they write it down or they put it in the computer and every so often you pay them. So is that debt, right? I have a tab in my makolet, right? Every time I go in there, I just give them a number and I don't have to pay. And then every so often the guy says to me, pay up. So what happens to that debt when it comes to Shemitah Kesafim? So the Mishnah said that debt is not canceled by Shemitah Kesafim. Because it's not a loan. Shemitah Kesafim doesn't cancel all debts. It cancels loans. Okay, I'll give you another example before we get back to this case. Let's say I smashed in your window. I was playing baseball, I hit the ball, and went through your window. Nezem. Okay, I have to pay. Right? That happened 3 hours before Rosh Hashanah. You come to me and say, you broke my window. I say, oh, okay, I'm really sorry, we'll deal with it after you. Shemitah for suffering. Now what? So the answer is for sure I owe that money. Because Shemitah suffering doesn't cancel all debts. It cancels loans. If you lent me money, then that's canceled. If I owe you money for another reason, like I did damage for example, then it's not canceled. So what about the bid in my colon? I bought stuff. But you didn't have any money. I bought stuff. I just didn't pay for it yet. So the Mishnah says that Hakafat HaChadut is not canceled by Shemitah unless he turns it into a loan. Im Asa'u Milveh, then Shemitah itself is canceled. What does that mean? So the Mishnah doesn't tell us what it means. It means, when did it stop being just a tab in the Makoleh and it starts becoming a loan? So some say that this is the case. When the guy says to me, hi, listen, you've been buying him for a couple of weeks, you haven't paid me, you owe me 3,000 shekels. And I said to him, okay, fine, listen, can I pay you next week? And he says, fine, you'll pay me next week. Or can I pay you, I'll give you half now and half in a month, or in three payments. As soon as we negotiate terms of when I'm going to pay him, some say that's when it becomes a loan. Until he asked me for the money, it wasn't a loan. Others say, as soon as he adds it up and tells you how much it is, right? He was running down the book. Every time you came in, you spent 4.5 shekels today, you spent 22 shekels. Every one day he takes out a calculator and adds it all up, that's when it became a loan. So let's say we have a situation where, but today when it's done on a computer, it could be that automatically happens, like it goes right into a computer. So maybe that, I don't know. The point is this. The point is, let's say you have a situation where there's a suffix. Okay? It's after Rosh Hashanah, and it's unclear, someone owed me money, it's after Rosh Hashanah, and now it's unclear whether or not Shemitah suffering applies. It's a suffering. Then the machloket that I just told you about will become relevant again. Why? If we say, how does Shemitah suffering work? If we say that Shemitah suffering cancels the debt, automatically. So the guy used to owe me money, and now there's a suffix whether that debt was canceled or not. Suffix in monetary matters, the rule is, Hamofine Chavero Alav Harachra. Okay? So in other words, it's some Gedalia of Shmit, right? The guy owed me money last week. I didn't collect it yet. And now it's unclear whether, because there's a suffix about whether this is called Hakafat HaKadot, or whatever the case is, it's a suffix. If we learn that Shmita's suffix is an automatic release, so the suffix is, was this debt automatically released or was it not? If it's in the Emotion of Chaveru of Araya, I'm not going to be able to trust it. I have to prove it. This is a suffix. On the other hand, if you hold that it was a mitzvah on me to release the debt, until I release the debt is not released. And now the suffix is, did that mitzvah apply or did it not apply? At least this man has there, if this is a mitzvah nidrabanan, suffix nidrabanan lakula. And then I don't have to release the debt. Right? If the suffix is whether the debt was automatically released, then we're going to apply the rule of Hamotzi Nechavero Avaraya, and I'm not going to be able to collect it. If the question is whether I was obligated to actively release the debt, this was a mitzvah midrabanan, and there's a genuine suffix about it, suffix midrabanan lakula, I don't have to release the debt. And then I won't release the debt, and I'll be allowed to collect it. If the case is a suffix, whether, let's say there's a situation where it's not clear whether Shemitah suffix applies or not. Whether this is a loan or another form of a debt. Okay? So we're going to have to apply the rules of suffix. But depending on how Shemitah works, there's going to be an opposite rule. At least when Shemitah suffering is midrabanan. If the concept of Shemitah is that the thing is released automatically, then the suffix is going to be whether or not it was released, whether he still owes it or not. Whenever there's a suffix, whether you owe me money or don't owe me money, I'm trying to sue you for money, I have to bring proof. I can't bring proof, I lose. But if we all agree that you owe me the money, and the question is whether I'm obligated to actively release it, there's a mitzvah on me to release it. I'm not a jerk. I'm not going to do what that Rosh says. If the Torah says I have to release the debt, I'll release the debt. If the Torah doesn't say I have to, I won't. We're not sure. So this is the mitzvah that writes the suffix l'chumra. If it's a mitzvah that I bought, the suffix l'chumra, then I don't have to release the debt. If I didn't release the debt, you still owe it to me. So this is a very interesting discussion. In practical terms, though, there's manazen, none of this is relevant.
because we all go prison.
And therefore, I'm not sure even that all these things have been resolved. We'll get to principle in a minute. Let me just tell you one other thing. It's also interesting, if the debt is really completely released, automatically, then why is Ruach HaKamim Melcha Hinenu if the guy gives it back? I don't own money. Why do I give it back, this money? And more than that, the Mishnah Chet says, what happens if, okay, the guy owed me money, right? So, Shamot, lo yigos. Lo yigos means I'm not allowed to even ask him for the money. Certainly not allowed to demand the money. But he comes over to me and says, here's the money I owe you. So I'm now not allowed to take it. I have to say to him, Mishametan. By the way, that is what the Rush says is different between the beginning of Shemitah and the end of Shemitah. The Rush holds that lo yigos applies already from the beginning, but Shamot applies only at the end. Meaning, according to the Rush, during the Shemitah year, you're not allowed to ask for the money, but if he offers it, you can just take it. Only after Shemitah, the Efetim Shemitah. In any case, the guy comes over to me after Shemitah for money that I lent him before Shemitah, or during Shemitah, whatever, and he says, here's the money I have. I'm obligated to say Mishametani. Me. You don't have to pay me. But the rabbis will be very happy if he says, Afal Pi Chein, I know that, but I want to pay you anyway, and then I'm allowed to pay. That's what the Mishnah says. The Gemara goes further. Yerushalmi says that although you have to say Mishametani, you can make it very clear that you really would like to be paid. The way the Gemara says it, you can say it in a soft voice while sticking out your hand. Mishametani. This is not what the Gemara says. The Gemara has a lashon like that. You know, say it in a soft voice, Yimino Pshuta Mekada. Right? The Babli goes even further, and at least the way Rashi in the sense of Gemara says, you can hang him up on a tree until he agrees to pay it to you. And he says, you don't have to pay me, but you said you were going to, and, you know, I'm not letting you down, I'm killing you now, something like that. Right, so that, so this raises the question of what exactly is going on? First of all, there's many credence to the idea that he really does still owe the money. It's not that the Torah canceled the debt. It's not even necessarily that I canceled the debt. It's just that I'm not supposed to collect the debt. That the debt still exists. If he can't pay it, he's not obligated. Because if he can pay it, although technically I can't sue him for it, and even if I do sue him, I'll lose, but he really should pay. So there's, you know, and his story from the Gemara, which, again, it's not exactly clear where the boundaries are on all of these things. And a lot of this never got a chance to really get tested, because as soon as the provable came along, Shemitah stuffing basically became a matter of theory, and basically not something that's enforced in practice. And therefore, I want to just discuss with you how the provable works. Now, before I do, I feel obligated to react to something. I feel a little bad doing this, because I'm sort of saying Lashon Hara. I don't mean to say Lashon Hara. Like, I'm wondering if I should turn the recorder off. And if I am, that's really mean to the people that are listening to this. So, maybe I'll leave it on. But I'll just say, I'm not really criticizing anybody. Because I just think it shows how, unfortunately, we've become so disconnected from all the mitzvot of Shemitah, that we've lost touch with what they are. When we came to Shemitah Karka, we talked about how even here in Israel, people view Shemitah Karka as a burden and as a problem to be solved and something to be, you know, just let's just get this over with instead of the tremendous, tremendous privilege it is. And I see from the shirt that, you know, we were successful this summer, at least in generating excitement and happiness about this unique mitzvah. In Chutz La'aretz, because the only aspect of Shemitah that applies is Shemitah Ksafim, and because even that doesn't really apply functionally, because all we do is sign a proposal and present the Gemara Kol Eisek, the whole Shemitah Ksafim takes the form of filling out a piece of paper, you know, we've completely lost touch with what this beautiful mitzvah was supposed to be. So, here's the story. About a number of months ago, I think it was... Was it during? I think it was already during the Shemitah year. Yeah, it must have been this past November. I was walking down a street in Queens, and I passed a Jewish store. And I did a double take because I saw a big sign in the window that said, "Get your proof bull now." So it felt like it caught my eye because I'm into Shemitah, and like, you know, and also then once I stopped this thing, I was trying to figure out, why do I need to get my proof bull now? It's only Cheshvan. And proof bull doesn't apply, isn't necessary until Elul. Like, Erev Rosh Hashanah, we do it. Some people did it a little earlier. Yeah. Why don't you get your proof bull now? Then I look at it and I see it's a music album that a guy put out called Proof Bull. The name of the album is Proof Bull. Here it is. Proof Bull. Proof. Proof Bull. Yeah, the guy's name is Kuzansky. So he made a song called Proof Bull. Playing words with his name, I guess. Ah, okay. So I went online. I didn't buy the album, but I went online to listen to the song. And it's a whole song about Proof Bull. And it basically, the song has basically one line in it, one lyric, which he sings over and over again. I actually like the music. That's just kind of nice. I like the music. He sings, "Hero mitakin et ha'olam in Pruzbu." And he sings, "Pruzbu, Pruzbu, Pruzbu, Pruzbu." Over and over and over again. So I'm trying to figure out, why? Okay, I get this straight, because then it's Kuzansky, Pruz, Pruz, Pruzbu. Okay. What's with this song? I'm going to go on the guy's website, and there's an article about the song. So he didn't write the song. He just sings it. There's a songwriter who writes the song. What? Yeah. So here, I'm going to read you this interview. I don't mean to attack the guy, because it's not him. It's just, I'm just sort of so out of touch with this. This is what he writes. So this is an interview in some publication that interviewed the songwriter. And the question is, isn't it kind of ridiculous to name a music album Proof Bull? What's the idea? So the singer says, ask him, he wrote the song, and the songwriter responds. And now I'm quoting. There's a famous Gemara about Hillel HaZaken. See, in his time, Chesed had stopped being done. Because the way a loan works is that it expires after 7 years. Now what happened? People stopped giving loans because they knew that after 7 years they'd lose their money. Loaning money, helping another yid, is one of the biggest mitzvahs. But people stopped doing this chesed. So Hillel established the Proof Bull of Beit Din, which was not canceled after 7 years in the Shemitah year. If not for the Proof Bull, chesed would have been lost from Klal Yisrael. So part of the song Proof Bull goes, I guess it's only part of the song, Hillel mitakein ha'olam im Proof Bull. The theme of the song and the album is to do chesed. So that's why he's celebrating Proof Bull as this great act of chesed. And I read this, I said, you just totally missed the point. Proof Bull's not about chesed. Shemitah Ksatin is about chesed. Proof Bull's about the fact that people weren't doing chesed. Right? What's the point? The Torah says, we're so stupid. What does the Torah say? Eses kilo yiyed b'chayev yom. Ki v'reis yivarechicha Hashem ba'aretz asher Hashem lokecha nokeim b'chayim 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 Rak im shamoa tishma b'kol Hashem lokecha v'shmo l'asot et kol ha'mitzvah hazot asher anokhi mitzavcha hayom. Ki Hashem elokecha b'rachicha kasher dibelach b'ha'avat et ha'goyim nabim ata lo k'avot. You follow Hashem, Hashem will bless you. You'll lend money to Goyim and you won't have to borrow money. But there will still be poor people among you. And then the Torah says, "Ki yihyeh b'cha evyot, me'achad achecha, be'achad she'arecha, be'aisecha, asher Hashem lokecha notein lach, lo te'ameit et levavcha, v'lo tikpos et yadcha me'achicha ha'evyot." When there's a poor person who comes to you for help, don't close up your hand, don't harden your heart, but rather, ki patoach tistach et yadchalo. Open your hand up, v'ha'avei ta'abitenu deimach solo. Lend him as much as he needs. He needs a lot of money, we'll give him a lot of money. Ki shamer lecha pen yedavar levavcha bria'a. We talked about this, Pasuk, and that's a very strong word, bria'a. Right? We talked the other day, last week, about Pilegesh Begiva. The people who raped and murdered that woman are called Anshei Bria'a. Right? But this person just is afraid to lend money that he's not going to get back, right? Bli'ah. Hishamer lecha pen yedavar nevavcha bliya'al. Leimor karva shana tasheva shnat hashmita. Zura'a inechav de achicha ha'evyon v'lo titeno v'kara alecha el Hashem ha'yabach ha'chet. If you dare not to lend them money, knowing full well that you're not going to get it back, that's a chet. Naton titeno v'lo yirad avavcha betitchalo. Ki beglal ha'davar hazeh v'rech ha'ashem lokech b'chol matzach. What did the Gemara tell us? Back to that Gemara in Gittin, what did the Gemara tell us? That's actually the Mishnah. It's from the Mishnah Shvita. Shera'a et ha'am shenimmelu milahalvot zedeh. They saw people who weren't doing chesed and weren't lending money to each other. They avru lo mashikatu b'Torah. They violated the law of the Torah. Hishamu l'cha p'nyed v'ma d'vayimu l'cha b'liyal. They were anshei b'liyal. They were evil people who didn't lend each other money. Amad b'hitkin puzbo. What could he do? He had no choice. Hillel would not have sung a song about his puzbo. Hillel didn't think he was doing a great act of chesed. Hillel realized he was preventing people from being cruel. That's not exactly the same thing as doing chesed. Now look, the post can tell us we should all fill out a puzbo. I intend to fill out a puzbo. And I'm certainly not criticizing anyone for filling out a puzbo. But I don't think we should be singing songs about it. And the Fachot, let's realize, you know, and I bring you back to that comment I quoted you from Rav Lichtenstein in that article, in which he mentions, both, he said, there are two places where the Torah warns us. Trust in Hashem and don't fail to trust in Hashem. One is Shemitat Karka, and the other is Shemitat Ksafim, and we failed both tests. And it came to Shemitat Ksafim already back in Hillel's day, they had to invent a puzbo, and in Shemitat Karka, came to our day, we had to invent Heter Mechira, and maybe some of these other loopholes that we found. And again, I endorse these things, and we have to use them, and we should use them, but that doesn't mean we should be singing about it. And certainly when it came to Heter Mechira, and I told you, I think we have to support Heter Mechira, at least when there's no other, if there's no Sirbacon, I'd much rather do that. But if it's a choice between Heter Mechira and buying from a guy, I'm gonna buy Heter Mechira. But that doesn't mean I'm happy about it. And it doesn't mean it's a positive thing. I gave a shiur a number of months ago. They asked me to give a shiur about Shemitah someplace. And I spoke about this. And I spoke about Heter Mechira. And I asked to explain all the reasons why I think it works and why I think it's necessary and why we have to do it. I said, but we should never forget that Heter Mechira is a terrible thing. And Rav Kook himself told us that. The cook himself went on and on and on about this, about how if you ever find a farmer who's able to do it without Heter Mechira, we should rejoice, Kimotzei Shalal Rav. And he told the farmers, at least leave a little bit of your field empty and all these things, and maybe treat it with Kedusha Shvid, and they don't have to do anything you can do because really this is terrible, and it's only a Shatab Chak, and we will. So I started saying, Heter Mechira is a terrible thing, and somebody in the audience got very upset at me. He started yelling, what are you talking about? We have to do this, it's all about Zionism and supporting the country and we have to prove Jewish settlement. And I said, I agree with every word, but that doesn't mean it's good. This is terrible. We're selling Eretz Yisrael to Goyim so that it loses its Kedusha just so we don't have to keep a mitzvah. I agree we have to do it, but let's admit it, let's cry over it. I had just quoted this. The comment was after I quoted from a Lichtenstein's article. And the same thing is true for Puzbo. We have to do it. And if you only told us to do it, I'm certainly not going to argue. And I intend to do it myself. There are some people who owe me money, and I may need the money. I intend to collect it, and I'm going to fill out a Puzbo. But Puzbo is not about chesed. Puzbo is about the lack of chesed. And maybe we're not on the Madrega yet that we're able to do this properly. Maybe the day will come soon when Shemitah will be Daraita, and maybe we won't even be able to do Puzbo. Or maybe the day will come soon when we'll all decide we no longer need to do Puzbo. But that's certainly the goal. The goal is not to idealize Puzbo as a model of chesed. Having said that, how does Puzbo work? So, the Mishnah, but before I get to Puzbo, there's one other case that is, maybe I should have, well, I can mention it now. What happens in the following situation? The Gemara Matos asks the following question. What happens if, ooh, rain late, okay, I'm going to finish quickly. What happens if I lend somebody money, not in the Shemitah year, you know, in the fourth year of Shemitah, let's say, whatever, I lend someone money for a period of 10 years. I say, here's money today, and we write in the contract, you pay me back in 10 years. So that means, by definition, there's going to be at least one, maybe even two, but at least one Shemitah Tzachim in the claim. So does Shemitah Tzachim cancel that loan, which means that a loan for 10 years can't exist, and by definition, a loan for 10 years is a gift? Or, maybe this is my focus in the Gemara. And let me be shown, but the bottom line is we hold that Shemitah Tzachim does not cancel such a loan. I'm talking about the Shemitah Tzachim that happens during the 10 years. After the 10 years are over, there's another Shemitah Tzachim before it's paid back, then it does get canceled. But the Shemitah Tzachim that happens in during that 10 years, or maybe even their children, depending on when this took place, it doesn't get canceled. And why? For a very simple reason. If the loan is for 10 years, if I lend you money today, and we write in the contract that you have to pay me back in 10 years, and tomorrow I go to you and say, listen, pay me now, I need the money now, you tell me no. You agree that I have to pay you for 10 years, and if I take you to court, I'm going to lose. There's no question that you owe me the money. But until the due date comes, I can't collect it. Therefore, when the Torah says to me, Shamot, and lo yigot, it's not relevant. There's nothing to lishmit right now, and I can't yigot anyway. And therefore, Shemitah Tzachim doesn't affect this loan. So any loan that's not yet due when Shemitah Tzachim happens isn't canceled. That doesn't have to be only for 10 years. If I lend someone today for a month is not enough. If I lend someone money today for 2 months, then also Shemitah Tzachim doesn't cancel because on the date of Shemitah Tzachim, the guy doesn't have to pay me yet. I can't collect the money anyway. And by the time it comes into effect, there's no more Shemitah Tzachim. So then, if 7 years later, if he still hasn't paid me, it'll cancel it, but not before. Now that has something to do with how provable works. It says that Moser Shtarotav Le Beit. If you hand your Shtarot to Beit, and say, Beit, you collect my debt for me, that Shemitah doesn't cancel those loans. Because it says, Et Achiv. You can't collect from your brother, but Beit is not your brother. Beit is, you know, Beit is just Beitin. So, Moser Shtarotav Le Beitin doesn't cancel the debt. And the Mishnah, the language of the Mishnah is a little confusing. The Mishnah says, this is Shvi Perek Yud. What's the Mishnah I'm looking for? Did you see that Mishnah? Did I not give it to you? The one that mentions Moser Shtarotav Le Beitin? Maybe I left that Mishnah out. Alright, I'm running late. I'll just tell you that. The Mishnah mentions two things. It mentions Moser Shtarotav Le Beitin, and it also mentions that Hillel was Mitzakin the Puzbul. The question is, what's the relationship between those two things? Some understand it. It's not Tosfos understands it. That, one second, Tosfos or Rashi? One second. Tosfos, yes. Tosfos says, Moser Shtarotav Le Beitin is a din d'oraita. Hillel had nothing to do with that. If you give your Shtarot to Beitin, then automatically there's no din of Shemitah Tzachim, which means we didn't need Hillel. Anybody could have done that beforehand. And therefore, what did Hillel do? All Hillel did basically is tell people, he basically just institutionalized something that already existed in Minnesota. But Rashi seems to understand now. Or maybe what he also did was he took a loan that some loans don't have a shtar. Let's say that it was what's called a mil b'dal peh. Maybe there's witnesses, but there's no documents, so I have nothing to give to Beitin. So maybe the principle is a way of creating a shtar that I can then give to Beitin. But basically it just applies an existing concept. According to Rashi, Moser Shtarotav Le Beitin and principle are one and the same thing. The Mishnah mentions them separately, but they're really one concept. And if it sounds like it, no. In the Torah, the Beit Din doesn't help. But that's what Hillel did. He said, if you give your shtar to Beit Din, it's good enough. And according to that, it means you have to actually give the shtar to Beit Din. Others learn otherwise, and they say that, no, it's like Rashi, but you don't actually have to physically hand them over. In any case, the nusach of the shtar at approval, there are two issues that need to be resolved in terms of the nusach of the shtar. I'll just tell you very, very quickly, and we'll just end it. One question is, it says in the Mishnah that the loveh has to have, the borrower has to have karka, has to own land. And presumably the idea behind that is that if he owns land, in general, if somebody owns land, right, and they owe me money, so if they can't pay, I take them to court, you owe me money, the guy says, look, I have no money, what do you want from me? Sooner or later, I can seize his property. And the court probably give him a little bit of time to pay, but eventually the Beit will take his house away. Even if there's no mortgage on the house. Right? What do you mean you have money? Sell your house. You're not willing to sell your house, Beit is going to confiscate your land. So if the guy owns land, so it seems that somehow that is like a mechanism for making the principle work. To you, I read the principle today. Right? Let's say. And the guy owns land. I'm not really taking his house away. But it's Ki'ilu, I already have a hold on his land, so it's Ki'ilu, he already paid the debt. And therefore, when Shemitah snuck and runs around, it's not relevant because the money's not in my pocket yet, but I sort of already own it. Okay? Now, that's not really what happens here, because, for example, the guy doesn't have to own land that's worth as much money as his debt. And in fact, it says if he doesn't own land, what should I do? If the Malveh owns land and the Lova doesn't own land, so then the Malveh says, I'm giving you dollar amos of my land that now you own, and on the basis of that little square of land, I'm collecting the debt. So the guy owes me $500,000, and I gave him, you know, 2 balata worth of floor tiles in my living room, and now on that basis, which are worth a lot less than what he owes me, I'm still able to collect the debt. But that seems to be the mechanism in which it works. And therefore, most of the shtarot of Prusval write in there that the malveh gives, the lender, gives some of his land to the loveh, and then uses that to collect the money back. What if the malveh doesn't have land? What if I don't own a house? I live in a rented apartment or whatever the story is. So, they say, well, everybody has some land. Even if you rented the land, even if you borrowed the land, even a student living in the dormitory, and even if the student's not paying for it, even borrowed land, if you live in that room, it's like your land. So, this seems to be a formality that they stretch. And a lot of the shtarot, basically, they all write in there that the malveh gives to the loveh karka, and then he gets it back. But Lichtenstein doesn't like that. And in Rimon's book here, he has two separate versions of the shtar. One version if the malveh has land, and one version if the malveh doesn't have land. And that's just left out. But most of the shtarot do have it. And the other question is the following. There is a gemara that says that the Beit Din that's used for Prusval can't just have to do what's called a Beit Din Kashrut. So it's interesting you take any three men and make a Beit Din out of them. It needs to be a Beit Din Kashrut. You need like really, really big rabbis. That's one question. The second question is whether the Beit Din has to be physically present. Because the Mishnah said, V'hadayanim chotmim o ha'edim. Either the Dayanim sign or the Edim sign it. And as a Yerushalmi, it's not clear how to read it, but it could be that you don't have to physically be in presence of the Beit Din. You could just have two Edim. I could be here, the Beit Din could be in another city, and I could just write into the shtar that I give all my debts over to that Beit Din of these three big rabbis, and I have two witnesses sign it. So there's two questions. One is, do you need big rabbis or anybody? And the other question is, do you have to be in front of the Beit Din or not? Now, that now gives me two options. Assuming that I don't have three Gedolei Hador in front of me, if they exist. Right? There are two ways to do it, therefore. I could take any three people, three hedyoto, and say, hi, you guys are Beit Din, here's my Prusval, sign it. That's one option. The other option is I can say, there's three big rabbis in Yerushalayim, I'm going to find two people who will just be witnesses, and I'll write in the star that I'm giving my chobo to that big Beit Din in Yerushalayim, or wherever it is. So there are different versions of this shaila. The Rabbanut version, most of the versions that I saw have you create a Beit Din with three Dayanim to sign it. In the last Shemitah, 7 years ago, the Rabbanut put out one which had the names of the three Dayanim who are the heads of the Rabbanut Beit Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, and had two people sign it as witnesses, not as things. I tried to find out what the Rabbanut's doing this year, and I wasn't able to get a hold of the Rabbanut, so I'm not sure. But the Lichtenstein has a version in which he does both. He says you have three people sign it. In the book here, if anyone wants, I'll show you, I'll make copies of one, the text of Lichtenstein's Prusval. He had three people sign it, and it says, if it works to give it to the Beit Din HaGadol Yerushalayim and Shalom B'Shmeihem, then these three people are witnesses, even though there's three of them in Gurun, we have three witnesses. And if it doesn't work to give it to the Beit Din in Yerushalayim, then these are the Beit Din and they're the Dayanim. So it's called... No, because it gives the name to these... He gives the names of the rabbis in the Beit HaGadol, who are presumably like three very chashuv rabbis. So as it says, if it works shalot b'fneihem, then I'm giving the debt to that Beit HaGadol in Yerushalayim, and the people finding here are witnesses. And if it doesn't work, then I'm giving the debt instead to this Beit HaGadol of these three people, and now they're not witnesses, they're judges instead. Because it's machloket whether he has to be b'fneihem or not. It's not clear which Beit HaGadol. Right. But in fact, but it also says in the Shtar that if the Beit HaGadol doesn't collect, that I have the right to collect. And since that's what's going to ultimately happen anyway, so now there's a question: does that Beit HaGadol have it, or does this Beit HaGadol have it?
But,
so they talk about that, right? The Rambam talks about that also. That's why maybe others didn't do it. That's why Rav Lichtenstein does it. So these are all the various options. The bottom line is you should make a provable with whatever nusach is in use in your community, and you should throw it out. Generally speaking, it's done Erev Rosh Hashanah. You could do it afterwards, just any loan you do afterwards, you can't do. And there is a minute. We recommend that everyone sign it, because you may not realize that maybe someone owes you money and you don't realize, and that's why it's just that it doesn't take any real effort to do. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sure you have to. If you know for sure that no one owes you money, and you're willing to say that if I'm wrong and I forgot about it, someone does owe me money, I'm not going to collect, fine. But we recommend that everyone fill one out. However, there is a minhag that some people have. It's mentioned in a number of times. It's a nice minhag that after you sign the provable, which we usually do on Erev Rosh Hashanah, then you go ahead and lend somebody a little bit of money, which you're not going to collect in order to fulfill the mitzvah. You know, if I sign the provable, then I can collect all my list, and then I go to someone here, I'd like to lend you 5 shekels, or 1 shekel, and then the person won't pay you back, and you'll be able to fulfill the mitzvah. You could do it by a shliach, though. For example, usually it's done in shul and Erev Rosh Hashanah when they do Taras Nedan. So, for example, you could make your father a shliach to fill out for you. He should then write into the Puzbol, or your brother, or anyone else who's going, he should write into the Puzbol that I'm doing it also for my daughter or for whoever. Or you could do it, you don't have to do it in Erev Rosh Hashanah. You could do it before. Okay, I'd try.